What's going on, everybody? I'm Johnny Brook. Welcome back to episode number 22 of the Crafted Podcast. Podcast all about making stuff by hand, woodworking, metalworking, electronics, leather, and more. We put out new shows every Wednesday on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, and pretty much everywhere podcasts are available. If you want to learn more about us, check us out on our website at craftedpodcast.com. We live stream there every Thursday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We also live stream via our app. It's just Crafted Podcast. Check it out on the iOS or Android store. And last, we just launched a Patreon page. So if you want to support us a little further, we've got all kinds of cool rewards there. It's patreon.com/craftedpodcast. Our top patron of the week is Make Build Modify, as always. So thanks a lot for your support. And thank you to all our Patreons. This has been a really, really cool way to get some support from you guys. So let me introduce my co-host, as always, James Wright from Wood by Wright. How you doing, James?
I am doing wonderful. Thank you so much for asking again, Johnny.
And Zach Herberholz from ZH Fabrications. What's going on, Zach?
Hey.
I can't do anything.
I know, man. It's impossible.
I'm waiting for someday to do something that eclipses me.
You need to do like the trombone, like womp womp.
Yeah, I don't think it'll ever happen.
It's one of the few instruments I don't have behind me.
Seriously. Well,
one of these days I'll just come on and say, hey, I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah. cool. Well, who wants
maybe
to
maybe I can try and out creep you one of these days. Like, I'll practice. I will practice.
It would be impressive. It would be very
like the Rocky
impressive.
Montage. And one of these days, just out of nowhere, you're going to get out creeped.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome. Well,
looking forward to it.
I'm going to kick us off this week with what I've been working on. It's been kind of a cool week. I put out the river table. I guess by the time you guys are hearing this in the feed, it was last week, but it's been doing really well so far. I got tons of awesome positive feedback on it. So really happy with the way that one came out. It was it was a surprisingly simple build once I finally got everything together. You know, I think the glass, like just sourcing the glass, was the trickiest part. And evidently, based on what I've heard from a number of people, even at $100, the glass I got was crazy cheap. Like, I've heard from multiple people that's like a $300 minimum order from a lot of places. So that was cool. And it just came together. It was really, it's a pretty simple build once you kind of dissect it. You know, I think figuring out how to get the glass inset with the wood and all flush is tricky. But once you wrap your head around it, you don't even have to have like crazy tools. Like, that's what I tried to convey in the video. It's like you could flatten a slab with a router, cut in half with a circular saw, and then build your legs however you want. You could even buy metal legs if you were like really not feeling like building something. And
I could do all of that if I had $10 million in equipment. This guy sucks.
Those comments, man. Those comments.
Did you get many of those?
Of course. Oh, yeah. Always. The thing is, if I shoot a video just inside my shop, even if I use none of those tools, like, I get those comments because it's just,
Do you get those, James?
I get those too, yeah.
That's
ridiculous. Like, well, I could do that too if I had a $300 Stanley hand plane.
Yeah, which is just
$300 Stanley hand plane.
Bought it for like $5 and restored it.
Exactly.
Come on.
Exactly.
I wish that those people would come to the Atlanta show and just wear a shirt that just says troll on them. Somebody should actually make shirts that just say troll on them.
That would be awesome. That would be amazing. Yeah.
I should do that. I throw all my money, my $1 million ideas away on this podcast.
Yeah, well, it was overall.
We make Crafted Troll shirts.
We need the little rubber dolls. They are wearing tiny Keller Theory T-shirts. Oh, that would be that would be ideal. Yeah, we can get somebody to make those for us. But yeah. Anyway, yeah, it went really well. Super happy with that, and on to my next build, of course. So
that turned out well. What did you have in cost of materials in that whole table? I bet I'm not the only one that wants to know.
Very low. The glass was 100. Yeah, the slab was 55. The walnut I already had, and that was it. So I guess I bought the Minwax wipe on poly just to try, but yeah, that was like $12. But less than $175, I think. So I think for the perceived value of that table, that is a screaming deal. I mean, I think I could very easily sell that for 2,000 plus. I mean, Greg gets, you know, 5,000 plus for his tables, although he has the quality of his slabs are just a whole nother level. Like, he always, it seems like, has some sort of cool burls on the side of his slabs and stuff like that. Just really crazy. If you guys haven't checked out Greg Klassen, that's the guy who basically invented the river table style, and his work is just incredible. So yeah, it was a fun build. And yes, Evan in the live chat asked if I kept it. I have kept it so far. You know, if somebody offers to buy it for the right price, of course I'll sell it, but it looks really nice. I don't really want to sell it.
It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it's one of those pieces that, like, you know, people walk in your house and you're just like, oh yeah, by the way, I built that. You know, it's like, no big deal, but I did build that piece. So it's one of those that you're really kind of, you know, can be proud of. So that was cool. So the thing I'm working on now is this crazy, it's like a room and board like design my mom found. She wanted some new coffee tables, and it's, the top is a 30-inch square, 4-inch thick, basically butcher block style hard maple top. So you guys can imagine how heavy. Mm. It's basically like a mini Roubaix, essentially. So it's a 4-inch thick hardwood top with a steel welded base. So I started working on the tops today and got all the lumber milled up and pretty much ready for glue. And my God, I think each coffee table at 30 by 30 is going to weigh like 150 pounds. So it's a serious build. So I skipped the gym today for sure. So that was functional fitness today for sure. It was that's going to be an intense one. So, and then just been finishing buttoning up my dust collection. Just had a few odds and ends left. Needed to get my bandsaw kind of piped in, and so got that all dialed in. And I think that'll be the video for, if you guys are listening in the iTunes feed, that'll be what comes out this week. So look for that. That'll be a good one. It was quite that. That's a serious project. I mean, it took a lot of time, but man, it is amazing, the efficiency. So, yeah, it's been good. So what have you guys been working on?
Well, I've been working on not a dresser.
What?
Whoa.
Yeah. I've actually been traveling. So I haven't been in my shop since last Thursday, really.
Wow.
But, I need to get back at that. But I've been out on the West Coast, went out to Williamsburg and a museum out there, and did Williamsburg and did a couple hangouts, and it was a good time. But went out there, actually went out to one of the fans of Wood by Wright and went to his shop, and he makes medieval furniture and medieval other things, which a lot of the woodworking history kind of like dies in the 16th century. And so you think of, you know, Roubaix and traditional hand tool woodworking and things like that, and it all comes from the 16th century. So it's kind of fun to meet with him and see, you know, how are things built in like the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 10th century.
Whoa.
It was kind of a fun thing. But the two of us actually decided to make traditional squares. So like for layout squares, like 2 foot by 2 foot. And it was just a fun time to hang out with a fan and build something together. So it was a very, very good time.
That's cool. So I'm trying to think, that early, did they have like good quality steel? Was that still kind of like the pig iron era, like when they basically had whatever ended up, you know, kind of that they were boiling up essentially? I mean, was there like as refined steel qualities for even blades and that kind of stuff?
As refined as what we would think of as like what we have today, absolutely not. Even the 16th century, it would be hit or miss.
Yeah.
But I mean, for most woodworking, you know, brass is actually not a bad metal. I mean, it dulls quickly, but you can also sharpen it quickly. So it just has to be harder than the wood you're working on.
Interesting. So they were using brass.
We think of, you know, yeah, well, I mean, they were using irons and steels. But we think of high quality steel as being an absolute must.
Yeah.
But it's really not, especially when you're doing hand tool and you're working slower and you have a sharpening stone there right there beside you. You can put up with some pretty bad stuff pretty easily.
They started out with, I mean, I think copper was like the first.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And it was still like, I mean, by today's standards, it's like, yeah, that's crap. But, you know, back in the I can't remember the guy's, the caveman that they found, and he had a I can't remember his name. I wish I could. It's on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, Egyptian woodworkers all had brass and bronze tools.
Hmm. Yeah, they found this caveman, and he had a an axe that was copper, and it was like him and his tools were like perfectly preserved, and they learned a lot about how they smelted and how they made it, and it's pretty interesting. I'll look the name up here in a minute. It was a good read though.
That's cool. Yeah, that's interesting. Huh. Cool. That's the historical woodworking side is kind of fascinating. I think that's a whole nother kind of facet that you should totally dive into, James, I think.
Oh, one of these days I want to do some Egyptian woodworking.
Yeah.
It's some cool stuff.
Yeah. Well, like even, you know, I sent you the... Oh, go ahead.
Otzi or Otzi, O-T-Z-I. If okay. you type in like... OTZI hatchet, I think you can see, and it was just like I can't remember. I think it was wood. It was like U wood or something, and leather, and he just wrapped a little piece of copper in it, and that was like one of the most primitive tools or like metallurgical tools that we've found.
That's cool.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean that. You know, I sent you the click spring thing the other day, like that. Little vice that he made, just totally, yeah. You know, I don't know. That just seems like right up your alley for sure.
Yep.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Zach, what you been working on, man?
Today I was up in my attic trying to replace the AC unit in my house, and I'm in Florida. So it was about 110 degrees up there probably. Cool. And, trying to learn how, AC units work and replace motors in the attic. So it was a lot of fun.
That doesn't sound like it. It sounds
no, it wasn't. I'm lying. Yeah, it was terrible. So that's what I did today. I've been making a lot of progress on that, the steel and wood chairs that I'm building for somebody. Be doing four of those. I'm kind of prototyping the first one. It's almost done. I have some pictures on my Instagram, and I'm really, really liking the way it's turning out. So,
yeah,
that's going to be a big project of mine. That's probably going to take me a month. And then I'm going to start designing. The same person that I did the doors for up in Daytona, he wants me to do like an industrial desk. So that's going to be in the design stages here probably in the next week or two.
Nice. So question on the chair, is that fabric the final fabric?
No.
Okay. I was interesting.
Nope. Okay. That's a placeholder.
That's what I figured, but I was just like, man, steel and wood and like striped outdoor cushions. That was
yeah
okay, cool, because I'm like in my head I'm like, oh, it needs to be like some cool leather, you know what I mean, like something that kind of goes along with the steel and wood vibe, you know. But that chair is looking killer, man. That looks awesome. And
that's,
I saw that you
killer.
Yeah, it looks super killer. And I saw that you built two of the right-handed sides, which was hilarious.
Yeah,
that was
I rarely have a bad day in the shop. Like I love being out there. I love what I do. I love listening to my music, and I lately like remembered about WFMU, which is a online like radio network based out of New York. If anybody's looking for new stuff to listen to, they have some really good shows. Like Downtown Soulville is awesome. I'm getting way off topic, but music's cool. So anyway, so I rarely have a bad day on the shop. I'm just, you know, but that day, man, like I went out to get the mail, and I come back and I trip over one of my angle grinder cords, knock it off of the counter, and it was my last cutting disc on there.
Oh.
And it fell right on the cutting discs and it broke it in half.
Oh.
And then like, so out of frustration, I pick it up and throw it. And this thing's like bent in half, but somehow like it rolls like three blocks down the road. And it was ridiculous. And so then like I found a tiny cutoff wheel that like had none left on it. And I did all these intricate like weird miter cuts to get this other armrest done. And then when I go to put it on, I realize that it's the exact same as the other side. I forgot to flip the wood over to do the left side. So that and just everything, I just kept knocking everything over. And it was just, it was one of those days where it was like, I think I made it to about like 1:30, maybe 2 o'clock. I'm like, I am just done. Like nothing is getting better. And my attitude is just getting worse and worse and worse. And there's no saving it. So I just pretty much called it a day.
Yep. Yep.
I don't know if that happens to you guys ever.
Oh yeah, but definitely. I mean, there's, and usually it's like my wife who has to tell me that, like, you need to stop, because yeah, she can just like see it, you know, because like for me it's just like, okay,
doesn't that make it worse?
Yeah,
like when somebody else tells you, yeah, like
you need to stop. A stressful glue up for me.
Oh, the glue ups are the worst, yourself, man. How many times, like, I don't know about you guys, but the Fast Cap glue bot, it punts very well. I know that from personal experience. I have punted it across the room many times because I was so angry at it. And yeah, that thing has really survived through many puntings. Man, that
I'm glad to know that I'm not the only one that gets kind of physically angry with things at times. It's rare, but it does happen.
That's what impresses me so much.
That's a show
about,
topic right there.
Seriously. That's what impressed me so much about Cremona, is like, he seems so even keel, even in moments where I would be losing my crap. Like, when he was, like, painting his bandsaw mill, like, there was just this ridiculous outdoor, like, sludge of a black paint getting all over everything, like, just making, like, his stir stick was falling in it and then falling on the ground, and it just looked miserable, and he was just totally
chill.
The
funny thing with Matt, it's the same way in person, because we were there when we were building the large gantry that the entire sawmill rolls on. We built it all up, and it's really nice. It's square. It rolls beautifully. I mean, it's rolling up and down with one finger. And then we decided to put in the diagonal members that stiffen it. Well, when we welded those in, they're all inside of the frame. And so it just pinched the whole thing in. I mean, literally the bottom legs were moved in about 2 inches.
Jeez.
And it literally pinched it onto the rail and could not move. And I'm like, I'm just about ready to flip out on this thing. And it's like, oh, it's okay. Well, we'll just do this. And it's like, come on, man, get angry, kick something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that, like, I have huge respect for him in that, you know, that arena, because, man, and I think, you know, as somebody like who's newer to the whole woodworking thing, you know, obviously there's certain things that you just get better at with time. And so things become less frustrating. But, and one of those is like planning your glue ups, like through, like having your clamps all open, ready, like there, like nothing is not already there, ready to go. But like, even like during a glue up, like the stupid little silicone brush that I use to spread the glue, like the brush head is way heavier than the actual like handle. So if I sit it on the edge of my bench, because I don't want to get glue all over my bench, every single time it will flip off onto the ground, get covered in crud, and then, like, you know, it's just one of those things, man. Glue ups. I have a lot of footage of me on camera, like, freaking out during glue ups, because, you know, it's like you got 15 minutes and it's like, you know, stuff is going to start tightening up.
We should ask everybody to record, like, keep, save the segments of their, like, them losing it on camera. And then we could do a giant compilation clip of just everybody losing their mind in one video. I like to think that Frank Howard, like, goes ape. I can't curse, but I just like the idea of him just going absolutely insane in his shop and, like, heaving table saws on their sides and all that heavy shop equipment. It just,
seriously,
I don't know why that's so funny.
Well, he's another one who just seems like he would just let it roll off. You know, it's like there are certain people that just seem like, oh, you know, it's no big deal. I'll just. Yeah,
or
whatever.
Actually, even better, Matthias Wandel. Could you imagine him?
Like, oh, man, yeah.
Just fits of rage in his shop.
Well, he, like, sometimes will show him just beating things into submission, you know, because it's just, because sometimes that's what it takes, you know? I mean,
my father used to call that brute force and violent manipulation.
Yeah, I mean, I am impatient with things very regularly, and if you hit it hard enough, a lot of times it will submit. I mean, sometimes it won't and it'll break, but a lot of times it will. So, yeah, Anyway,
we should poll the audience on which YouTube maker would be the most likely to be like a serial killer or something. It might be interesting. I'm curious. Who do you think it is?
I don't know.
Message us, folks. Who do you think would be the most amazing serial killer?
Who leads a secret evil life? Like, which one of the YouTube makers is like secretly twisted?
The After Dark. I don't know. I mean,
that'd be interesting. I want to read. I hope people honestly submit stuff, because I'd love to read it next week. I think that would be really fun.
That would be funny. Cool. Well, I guess let's move into the show topic. We're going to talk. It's a bit of a broad one, but we figured it could kind of encompass multiple things. So we're going to talk about basically choosing our next woodworking project. So kind of how we pick our projects. Maybe, you know, if you're a beginner, how you would go about picking your next project. You know,
not just necessarily limited to woodworking.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever your material choice might be. But I think there's some strategies that can help you be successful, but also like help you learn at the same time, you know, because I think it's easy to get into a rut of building similar stuff. And who wants to kick us off?
Notable mention, Brad Ward in the live chat just mentioned Paul Sellers. Pretty good one.
Yes.
Paul the Ripper.
Now on the topic, I think for me, I like to pick the next thing that makes me excited. I want to have a project that is keeping me up at night thinking about it. And, you know, when I'm driving in the car, it's the one thing in my brain of how am I going to do that next step? How am I going to because if I'm not, you know, mentally absorbed into a project, I know it's going to be the project that kind of sits on the back burner and slowly dies.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be, you know, something as large, you know, I mean, because you can pick up just about any project, but if it's something that's so large and it's going to take you so long that enthusiasm dies off, that might not be the project it takes, kind of like the dresser.
Yeah.
I had a lot of enthusiasm for that first 3, 4, maybe 5 months even.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, I think enthusiasm almost verging on anxiety. That's when I know it's like just hard enough. You know, like I'm going to start working on these arts and crafts style chairs, and I'm really nervous but also excited, you know? So it's one of those things where it's like I'm pretty sure I can build it, but there's just that kind of hint of, you know, like doubt in the back of your mind that like, oh man, what if this just goes all wrong? But I think that's when you learn the most, you know, like we've talked about before, like pushing yourself that extra 10% or whatever over your last project and not just kind of settling for something that's easy because it's easy. You know, I mean, this at the end of the day, we're all trying to get better at this. You know, this is not a necessity for most of us. This is something that, you know, we enjoy doing and I think all of us want to improve upon. So, you know, pushing yourself with whatever you're working on next is always a very good thing, you know, because I mean, if you just build the same thing over and over again or a similar style of thing, you're never really going to learn that much. So, you know, add some
always
funky angles or whatever. Yeah.
I find that I tend to, a lot of it's like subconscious. Like, I feel like I always have to have more than I can handle. Like, I always have to have more on my plate than I can digest. And I don't, like, mentally, like, when I think about it, I'm like, no, that doesn't make sense. I don't want that. I want things neat, clean, and organized and structured. But in reality, I always take on more than I can handle. And I always, like, I think that it really, it's, like, thrilling to me to be buried in, not completely overwhelmed buried, but, like, just to the point of, like, you know, clipping, like just like a little bit, you know, you're just on the edge. I think for me, it makes it exciting. And most of the projects I find that I take on, I tend to make them something that I haven't done before. They almost always every project I have, I find a way to incorporate something that I've never done before. And it really puts the pressure on me to develop that skill. And I think I like that because it keeps it exciting for me to where I know that like not only am I building this piece that's new, but I'm developing a new skill that I'm going to have, and I can keep that. So there's a value in most of the pieces I make. Not only the value is in the piece, but also for me, the added value of now I can do a blacksmith door handle. Now I can do this. Yeah. Now I can, whatever it is, you know, like it's something that I've gained from the experience. And I think that helps justify, you know, the build for me. It keeps it interesting.
Yeah.
I get that a lot with carving. Because when I first was thinking about carving, it was one of those
2 weeks ago, and now you're mastered it.
Well, it's one of those esoteric things that is like, this is only for someone with a crazy amount of skill and talent, and you know, because carving is like it's all freehand, it's all an expression of your skill, but it really is just a complicated breakdown of a bunch of little steps. And some of the basic steps can be learned in 3, 4, 5 minutes with a chisel, and you've got it. And anyone can pick it up. And it's one of those amazing things. And I usually get a comment like once every other day or so from someone of like, hey, I just tried doing that carving. It blew my mind. This is so easy. I've got to do more of it. Because it's one of those things that you think is so difficult and so hard. But once you actually jump into it and you start to get some of the basics, the whole thing just clicks and it takes off. And it's one of those things you're just constantly thinking about. It's like, oh, this is awesome. I got to do more.
Well, and I think that's woodworking and making stuff in general. You know, I think when you get started, you look at these pieces and you're like, that is impossible. Like, how did they possibly make that thing? And then, you know, as you progress, and especially when you decide to build it yourself, you break it down into steps and it almost just becomes easy. You know, it's like, why did this feel like such an intimidating thing? And it's because you haven't thought through, okay, well, yeah, I know how to do this. I know how to do this. Like, I'll figure out how to do that step when I get to it. You know, like, and you just break it down into these little manageable chunks, and anything. I mean, you know, like a year ago, if I looked at that river table, I would have thought that is just a ridiculous, insane project. But, you know, when you break it down, it's amazing how that works.
Yeah, it's the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's like you said, you said the other day, how do you eat an elephant? You know, one bite at a time. You know, you just take it little by little.
You start like mentally, when you start building stuff, you start dissecting pieces. You start looking at stuff and just figuring out how everything works. And you're building kind of your like builder's dictionary of, you know, ways to do things and put sentences together. Essentially, the analogy of, you know, words and skills. And it's pretty much you just take everything one piece at a time. And
and any skill out there is completely learnable.
Oh, yeah.
And it doesn't even have to be something you practice a lot. Because I try to make the first thing I ever do any particular skill on something I want to keep. And it just kind of makes you focus on it a little bit more.
Yeah.
And you get to...
And you can kind of cut yourself some slack. You know, like if you're building it for yourself... And it's got a mistake, that's okay. You know?
And I take people over to like my first hand cut dovetail, and I'll show them this. And like, this is my first hand cut dovetail. And look at my, like, really? Like, well, yeah, you see this gap here and there? It's like, well, yeah, but it still looks like a dovetail. Like,
yeah.
Well, yeah.
Exactly. The thing is, the secret is, at the end of the day, woodworking is not that hard. I think that's what, I think that's what is the common misconception. You know, I think when Chris Salamone was on here, it was funny to hear him say that like he built a project with his wife, but he basically just instructed his wife how to do each step, like along the way, as someone who had never done woodworking. And she built this thing, and it was a pretty simple project, but like it was the same thing that he had built previously, and they basically looked identical. You know, it's like, when you break it down, woodworking is not that difficult. You know, like anybody can do it, and you know, you don't have to like have some crazy training and whatever. I mean, it's just that's what makes it so cool.
Teaching my 6-year-old to use a handsaw.
Yeah, like that's awesome. That's amazing. Yeah. So I mean, for choosing your next project, I think find something that's going to push your limits, and find something that you can build with the tools you have on hand, or you know, if you want to invest a little further, do that. But, you know, if you...
One caveat I would say to that is don't let the tools you have on hand hold you back.
Certainly.
In other words, I don't have a good enough table saw for this. No, even if you just have a, circular saw, a handsaw, don't let your tools limit you or say, I can't build that because I don't have the tool.
And if you are limited, make sure to comment on all of our videos about how you can do everything we do.
Only you have more tools. I mean, that's totally. Do not, because it's very easy to fall into that mindset, but there are a million ways to do everything in woodworking. Yeah. And even if I built a project and I used dominoes, there is absolutely no reason you need to have a domino. You can cut mortise and tenons by hand. You can use dowels. You can use pocket screws. I mean, there's a million ways to replace that one technique, just get creative. Do what you can. It's not a good excuse, not a good reason not to build something because you don't have this particular tool.
I started with a handsaw, a set of chisels, and a hand plane, and I built furniture with that. I didn't even have a mallet. I used a block of wood until I made my own mallet.
Yeah.
At some point, didn't you break tools down into two categories or something?
Well, yeah, everything is just a chisel that's in a jig. Even a table saw, it's just a whole bunch of chisels put into a circle, and it's a jig that runs all those chisels. Everything out there is just a chisel. It's just a jig for a chisel.
It's just a blade.
If you break it down into that, it's the exact same material, the exact same method. You can just do it slower. And
yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
When I look back at how I started, I did a lot of projects before I had a table saw. And now I would, it certainly makes life incredibly way easier, but I did it without those tools. I did stuff before I had a router. I did stuff before I had the stuff that I use all the time now because it's quick and efficient.
Yeah.
I used to do work without it. I think I pretty much had a circular saw and a drill what I started with.
Yeah.
And you can do so much with that. Dude. You can't do a lot very fast, but you can. I don't want to put this out there too far to where I'm getting, well, no, you can't. But there's so much that you can do with a circular saw and a drill.
Oh, dude.
And then you start adding one piece at a time.
Yep.
And it's not about efficiency. It's about, in the long run, it's about efficiency, but it's about what can't you do? You have a, you have a circular saw and you have a drill. What can't you do?
Yeah. Cut curves. So then you buy a jigsaw.
Exactly.
That's the progression. And that's what I think frustrates me about the whole, well, if I had those tools, none of us started out day one with our shops looking like this. You know what I mean? I started out with a miter saw. And a drill, and I built a bunch of crap with those two tools. And then I added slowly, my dad gave me some of his old tools. And then, it's just a progression. And, as you want to tackle new projects, maybe you decide, it's time to invest in a new tool or whatever. But there's so much. Look at what Benueta does at Homemade Modern. That dude uses less tools. Tools that could all fit in a carry-on piece of luggage. And he has built hundreds of pieces of really cool furniture, using very basic materials. Same with, Mike from Modern Build, same deal. Very basic, the whole DIY scene. If you're lacking for inspiration, go look at those people. Even Anna White, she gets a lot of hate in this community, whatever. But I think her projects are amazing if you're just starting out and want to learn some basics and, build some simple furniture. You do not need a ridiculously set up shop to be able to build cool stuff. It just is not the case. So...
Yeah. And the cool thing about doing it progression wise is it gives you a chance to really learn the intricacies of the tools. I know for a fact that if I would have started out with all the tools that I have right now, I would not if I just poof one day had all these tools with no experience with any of them, I would have very minimal exposure, very minimal experience.
Yep.
The creativity, the weird ways that you can use tools, I wouldn't have that. I wouldn't have developed that out of the necessity. But, building a tool at a time, you get I mean, you get your first router, you're going to be finding 100 different ways to use that thing just because it's your new tool and you're excited to use it and you're going to try it, you know, and you're going to put it through its paces essentially and figure out what you can use it for and how to use it and that sort of thing. Whereas, you know, if you just magically had all the tools, it'd be really easy to overlook and, you know, some of those things wouldn't be in your mind.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. We just got a comment from Brad from the live chat. He says his biggest problem with choosing his next project is the design phase. He says most people aren't as creative as you guys. I think that's the hardest part. And I don't know. Personally, I think that is a misconception. I think while that sentiment might be good, Brad, I think I don't consider myself like some, you know, I'm certainly not a furniture designer by trade. You know, I've never went to design school. I've never done any of that stuff. I just surround myself by with really cool looking stuff, whether that's on YouTube or on my Instagram feed or Pinterest or whatever. And I mean, it's almost impossible not to get inspired and figure out something cool that you want to either knock off or use elements of. I mean, like, honestly, I think just completely duplicating someone else's design sometimes is a great way to learn to do stuff and figure out your style. And I do that a lot. I mean, realistically, like, a lot of my projects are not original designs. You know, they're a take on somebody else's design. And, you know, anytime I do that, obviously I credit them, and there's nothing wrong with that because, you know, there are some designs that are like just lasting designs that, you know, like, I mean, look at like shaker pieces, you know, like very few people are designing original shaker pieces because those designs have lasted centuries and they don't need to be redesigned. You know, I mean, same with, you know, the old school, like Queen Anne type of stuff, you know, like they're the reproduction of these beautiful pieces of furniture. And so, yeah, you don't have to be like a furniture designer to be able to build stuff. I think that's a misconception.
I am a huge copycatter.
Yeah.
And usually the biggest changes in my design come from either a mistake or a limitation in what I currently have.
Not like, a design feature. You gotta get your terminology and like right.
I'll cut something short and then like, oh, well, now I've got to figure out how to make this look somewhat normal. And so then I just have to kind of slap something together and it's just a whole new design look. Because it's something I'm fixing or, you know, my board is different. So I don't have enough material to make something that long. Let's rework something.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I think for me, like, I think the design is one of my favorite parts.
Oh, me too.
I mean, I really like, I like trying to do things new. I mean, I'm not trying to discredit doing things that have already been done or copying. I mean, that's how I started, and that's probably how everybody started, and that's a great way to start. Because you have that finished product in your mind and you know what it's supposed to look like, and you know along the way if it's going to look like that, and it kind of gives you a course to chart. And but with design, I think the cool thing about that is once you figure out your medium of design and how you do it, it should be the same way. Pretty much, instead of copying somebody else's piece, you're just copying your own design. If you designed it well enough, I mean, if you did all the legwork on the design, you got your measurements, you thought everything out, you know, 3D modeling or not, whatever works for you. Once you have those plans and you know what the finished product is supposed to look like, it's really no different than copying something that somebody else has done. So. For me, it's just, I like trying to do new things. So the design is one of my favorite aspects of it. And then especially the cool thing is it always looks better. I feel like it always looks better when it's done, no matter how good your model is. And if you build it exactly to your model, it's going to look way cooler in person.
Seeing it in real life is just amazing. That's one of the coolest things about like using SketchUp is like, creating that model, and then, you know, 2 weeks later you have this real tangible thing. And it's like, I don't know, to me it's always weird too, because it's really hard to, I think, picture true dimensions in SketchUp, you know. So it's like,
yeah, man, it
that's a little bigger than I imagined it, or smaller or whatever. And it's just kind of.
You have to get like Wendy, the girl with the paint can in there, so that you know like what side. I don't know if her name's Wendy, but it's something like that.
Yeah, to give you perspective. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, Brad was just saying, you know, he does a lot of copying and wishes he could come up with unique designs. I think you will naturally kind of fall into one design style, you know, like for me, that's like becoming the kind of modern, mid-century, modern, whatever. And so, you know, you start riffing off of what other designers have done before you. And eventually it'll get to a point, even if you start by copying, it'll get to a point where, you know, you've made so many changes that it is your own piece at that point. You know what I mean? It is a collective idea of different
comes after years.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you're not going to start out like
that. I don't know about years, but experience certainly. Yeah. But you know, and like I said, it's like vocabulary building. You know, you're putting words in your dictionary, you're putting skills in your basket. And you know, if you've done, if you've made hairpin legs before, maybe sometime on a table down the road, you'll go, oh, you know what I could do on this? I could do hairpin legs. I know how to do those, or I've seen those. And then the ideas start coming together and you start pulling those random, using the word analogy, you start pulling those random words out of your, you know, your builder's dictionary, and you can start, it's like Legos, you know, what if I do this kind of top with this kind of legs? Or what if I saw this thing? And I think the most important tool in my designer bag is, I have a very organized folder that has other folders, and it's any picture that I think is cool. It doesn't matter if it's furniture, if it's a car, or if it's a whatever it is, it can be anything. Like, and I'll put them, I have different categories, and I'll have an industrial category, I'll have a chair category, I'll have a table category, lights or whatever. Or curves, or, you know, it's not just limited to objects, but ideas as well. And, you know, if I'm designing a project, I'll go through there and I'll be like, okay, I have to build a table. First thing I'm going to do is look through my 300 pictures of tables and write down the ones that kind of match what the person wants. You know, if the person wants a industrial themed table, I'll go through all the tables and I'll make another folder of potential candidates out of that. And I'll copy pictures from that into there. And then I'll go into my industrial category, and it might be pictures of lights or factories or gauges or who knows, like whatever it is, just things that could potentially go into this next build. And then I start, you know, minimizing that down into, you know, five or six pictures by the end. And that's really how I like to design stuff. And it's worked really well for me. So,
yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, Matt in the live chat compared this kind of woodworking and kind of borrowing design ideas to programming. And it's kind of the perfect analogy, because programming is the same deal. You know, like there are, you know, open source codes out there that you can just basically drag and drop parts from into your own, you know, project and have that be part of what you're doing instead of writing it from scratch. And I think that's a very similar idea. And the other thing with both of those is that there's the technical side to woodworking too. You know, that like there are certain things that you can just do wrong, and when you're just starting out, like it's pretty easy to not think of, you know, like different types of joinery for wood movement and all these kind of things that kind of go into the design part of it. And so that's why I think, again, kind of maybe borrowing elements from other people if you're just starting out or whatever is a great idea, because then you at least are pretty sure that it'll work out for you. So yeah,
in woodworking there's no such thing as stealing.
Yeah,
unless it's tools. Don't steal other people's
tools. Cool. Well, I think that's probably enough on the main topic. I think that was a good one. That was that was fun. So we got a couple of questions from email, so I guess let's go ahead and dive into those. First, we got one from John Knightum. He's asking about, he's heard us talk about Craigslist alerts multiple times and us being kind of notified, and he asked, you know, if we have an app or something like that that we recommend for that. So I know on iPhone I have one called C Plus for Craigslist. It's the, you know, the letter C and then PLUS plus, all one word. And that's what I used. I've had a search alert for the word planer in the tools category for like 3 months. And finally this weekend, a planer popped up that I was actually interested in. You know, I had to wade through 100 of the DeWalt ones that I already own to then, you know, wait for this one kind of more commercial size one to pop up. And, you know, called the guy within an hour of it being posted and got it immediately. So, yeah, it's outstanding. Yeah. So, yeah.
I use one called C Pro.
Okay.
And yeah, I do the same thing. I have like 30 or so notifications set up and all sorts of weird things like grandfather's tools, antique tools and things like that that I'm just always looking for.
Grandfather's tools.
Yeah, I get some of the greatest things, like I'm selling my grandfather's tools. I don't know what they are.
That's
if anyone
awesome.
Wants them. And I actually get quite a few good tools from the list of grandfather's tools.
Try and put yourself in like the complete layman's terminology.
Yeah, that's fine.
Oh man, I have something I need to.
Or woodworking decor. I also have that one on there. I've gotten a few from that.
I have something that I need to share with everybody. It's on my laptop. I don't have it right now, but somebody. I feel like I'm going to do it an injustice by talking about it versus just showing everybody the picture. But there was an ad on, I think it was Craigslist, it could have been eBay, for a Merida brisket joiner.
Merida brisket joiner.
They obviously biscuit had no joiner? Idea what they were working with. Brisket, you know, like.
No, I'm was it a biscuit joiner or?
Yeah.
Or
No, it was a Makita biscuit joiner. And they listed it as a Merida brisket joint.
Oh, that's amazing. I was like, what is that possibly? Could that be? That's hilarious. Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things. I'll put it on my Instagram or something when I get off the podcast.
Yeah.
If anybody wants to see it, I'll put it on my Instagram. It's hilarious. I've been saving it for like a special occasion because it's so good.
Yeah, I should have set up like the search error ones too, because like I know I noticed a lot of people, like instead of planer with one N, it was basically planner with two N's.
Yeah.
Or it would autocorrect to planter. So I should have just had like all three of those as search terms just to like, you know, because that's when you get the best deals, you know.
Yeah, I think if you have planter as a search term on Craigslist, you're going to be bombarded.
Only in the tools category, though. See, that would be be the trick. But yeah,
or planer with an I.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I saw that. I saw that for sure. Yeah.
You know what? I still screw up. I still screw up joiner and jointer.
Yes.
I still don't know. Like I think it's joiner without a T, but I don't know.
Well,
yeah, Josh Luther was just saying, I love seeing radial arm saws called table saws.
Yeah.
I've seen those quite a bit.
Well, a biscuit joiner is no T, and then the jointer, the tool for squaring stuff up, it has a T. So
unless it's a hand plane, then it's a joiner.
Yeah, see, this is why it's just like, what happened?
Which
like,
makes no sense
because
with a T makes no sense.
Planes.
Because you joint
boards
an edge
with a joiner.
Yeah, that makes it should have a T. That's dumb. It's
confusing.
It's English.
I still don't know.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, cool. Well, I guess let's move into what we've been watching, and I am unprepared. So, who wants to kick us off, James? It looks like you got
something. I have been watching American Artisan, and he's a recent woodworking channel, but really cool. And it's actually it is a really well set up YouTube channel, doing some really cool videos right off the bat. It's not only the guy doing the woodworking, but also has his own videographer, and so you get to see some really good video shots. Really well thought through projects, great communication, just a really sharp YouTube channel, and I've really enjoyed watching it. So all the basics and some of the more advanced things as well. Just a really good woodworking channel.
Nice. Zach, what you got?
I've been watching Parks and Rec.
Oh man.
And it's hilarious. It's like the first few like shows I was like, yeah. And then it just keeps getting better and better. And I really look forward to each episode.
Yeah. Season one was like, it was a rough start for them, but man, as soon as basically it's season so two good. And onward are amazing. Like
I can like, I'm only in like maybe a couple episodes into season two and I'm already like bummed out that I only have like four more, that I only have like 60 more episodes to watch. I'm already disappointed.
It won't be your first watch through. I can guarantee that. That is, that show is just incredible. I mean,
it's so
what
good.
A cast, man. I mean, freaking yeah. Aziz Ansari is so funny. Like that dude. Yeah. He cracks me.
I don't think he can beat, I don't know. Ron Swanson. I mean,
Ron Swanson's
good.
Amazing. But man, Aziz cracks me up
too. It's all good. It's all good. Yeah. I did see something on Netflix though, and I haven't watched it yet. It's called Abstract: The Art of Design.
It's awesome.
Oh, cool.
I've only watched the first episode so far, but Shannon from Wood Talk recommended it a couple weeks ago, and the first episode is about this illustrator for The New Yorker. Really interesting. I think episode two is about a footwear designer for Nike, and I'm really interested in that one because I think that's much more like the illustrator was interesting, but he was a German dude and just kind of typically German, like very kind of even keel and not super excitable kind of guy. And so for 50 minutes, it got a little monotonous at points, at least to me. But I'm very looking forward to the footwear design, and there's all kinds of other people on the episode, so that'll be a really cool one. Yeah, let's see. I'm still trying to find something that's worth recommending. So I'm gonna recommend this dude. He I've been watching his stuff for a while. His name is Hampton Rutland. I don't know if you guys ever heard of him. He did this shop build. It's probably been a year or so at least since he came out with it, but he took all this reclaimed wood from like, you know, houses that were getting foreclosed and torn down and that kind of stuff, and rebuilt like his whole shop, like an amazing shop with it, and does all this stop motion work, really incredible camera work. The dude just he's in Louisiana or something like that, and really, really cool camera work. And he's just started. He bought a house on an island, and they are completely, essentially gutting it and redoing it. And it's just kind of, you know, it's not super like making focused at all, but it's very just kind of like lifestyle type of stuff. And he's really good at being on camera, and his camera work is phenomenal. So he does really cool stuff. So definitely recommend him. I'll throw him in the show notes rather. So
we should have a minute or two of banter about the Atlanta Wood Show.
Yeah,
because this is going to come out right before, I think.
Yeah, by the time you guys hear this, this will come out on Wednesday. The woodworking show in Atlanta is Friday and Saturday at the Cobb Galleria. So if you just look up the woodworking show Atlanta, it'll give you all the info. I think tickets are like $15. They're super cheap, but like $12 actually, maybe. But I think pretty much, I don't know what the schedule is Friday, but Saturday pretty much all day. I know I'll be there. I'm sure you guys will be there pretty much all day.
It's like 70 YouTube channels.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. So
I got recognized in public for the first time ever the other day.
Nice.
Where at?
Cool. I was at a coffee shop.
Oh, really? Out in the wild? Yeah. Nice.
Wow. Yeah, not even at like a Lowe's or Home Depot. That's awesome.
Nobody goes to those here. It's Florida. Like just people looking for work in front of the Home Depot. Nobody actually goes into them here.
That's hilarious. That's
now
cool.
It's sad.
Yeah, it'll be a good one. I think we're... are you guys going to go to the Highland Hardware thing on Saturday morning,
yep.
You think?
I'll be there Saturday morning.
Yeah?
I have no idea. I'm going to go wherever you guys go because I have no plans.
Yeah, I figure we should all just probably ride together everywhere. So I figure
that would be good.
We can all just go there. So yeah, Highland Hardware that morning, I think it says 8:30, but probably more like 9. But yeah, so Highland Hardware is a great, amazing woodworking store in Atlanta. kind of a, you know, legendary woodworking store, really. And then on to the Cobb Galleria. And then I think there's some sort of hangout thing that night just at the Sheraton Hotel and a restaurant right nearby. So if you guys are in the Atlanta area, even if you're not in the Atlanta area and you're into
it's well worth the drive.
YouTube stuff, yeah, totally worth a road trip. So
yeah, Izzy Swan, let's see,
Jimmy Duresta,
the woodworking podcast, the Wood Talk, yeah, they'll all be there.
Crafted Workshop, yeah. I mean, just to name a few. So. and then we're also, in case you haven't heard, we are having our own meetup on Sunday night. That's April 2nd here in Asheville. So in Asheville, North Carolina, not in Nashville. That always gets confusing, but, yeah, Asheville, North Carolina, and that'll be awesome. It's going to be starting at 6 p.m. at Asheville Hardware.
Really looking forward to going there. That's a that's been on my list for a while.
It's all
going to
be fun. This is so cool for me. I haven't done any of these, and I haven't met any YouTubers in person yet. So
it's going to be a killer weekend.
Be
I'd really say.
What's
totally
that?
Killer. Super killer weekend.
Yeah, you know what's going to suck is everybody's going to be like, "You're that wall sconce guy, aren't you?" I'm like I feel like the Rick Astley of YouTube. Like that's my hit. Nobody's going to know anything else I've done. And like, I feel like I get Rick rolled whenever I look at my YouTube dashboard, because like if my numbers are up, I'm like, "Oh, cool. One of my new videos is doing well." And then I click on it. And it's like, nope, it's the wall sconce video.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. That video has been nuts. Cool. Well, I guess let's talk about our favorite tool since we skipped it last week. I
got mine in. I don't know what your problem is.
You squeezed it in there right at the end. Well, mine is the H&T Gordon Curved Sole Spokeshave. So when I was shaping the edge of that slab, I'd never really used a spokeshave that much before. I used it a little bit on the tool tote, but not really very much at all. And it was so fun to just basically go to town on the edge of that slab, because the way it had been cut, it must have been kind of like, you know, angled around the side of the tree where it was cut, so the bottom edge was a very kind of acute angle, and so it was kind of weak and thin, so I needed to just kind of shave it down and round everything over. And man, it was a pleasure. So that, I don't know. Have you used any H&T Gordon stuff, James?
I have, yeah. Yeah. No, they're really good.
Yeah. It's
spokeshave is just something that just,
man,
it gets addictive.
Yeah. Well, and that curve,
it's hard to stop.
That curved sole just makes it so easy, too, because you can into like every little nook and cranny. You know, it's like,
and you can easily adjust your depth with just a little bit of a turn.
Yeah. And like, I have never really used a spokeshave in any real project, never had any instruction. I just picked it up, took it out of the box, and like kind of set the blade however the instruction told me to, and then just started using it. It was like, oh, okay, this is easy. Like, this is amazing. So I don't know why it had just kind of sat there. But I mean, I don't do a lot of curved stuff, so I guess that's, you know, a curved sole spokeshave on a flat piece of wood is, I don't know, not as useful, but yeah, it was amazing for that. I want to do more live edge stuff just to play with that tool. So highly recommend.
Well,
that
even one. even for like chamfers and things like that, I'll pull out my spokeshave.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just it's quick, it's easy, and it's so simple to just go to, and it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Yeah, very organic. You know, that's another one of those things, like we were talking about in the last show, like trying to bring that organic element in can be so refreshing, you know, because you're not trying to get it perfectly square and perfectly whatever. It's just nice to be able to like do something until it looks cool to you, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of fun. So James, I see yours is right along the same line.
My tool is very similar. It's a spokeshave that I was just given this weekend when I was out in Pennsylvania. One of my all-time favorite YouTube watchers, John Burkett, gave me this spokeshave that he found, and the blade is 3.25 inches wide.
Wow!
It is huge. It is larger than any of my planes. a 3 1/4 inch wide spokeshave blade. The whole thing is like almost 18 inches. That's about 20 inches wide, tip of handle to tip of handle. Massively beastly thing. And I just gave it a quick sharpen up and played with it this week. And it's like, oh, this is my new favorite tool. This is something I would have a lot of fun with.
That's awesome.
So I'm hoping to have a video soon of restoring it and bring it all back. But it's a really seriously, monstrously cool tool.
That's awesome. Zach, you got one for this week?
I do. Mine is actually a 3-in-1 oil or any sort of light machine oil.
Oh, yeah.
I use that stuff so much. That sounds really weird. it's really useful. It's really versatile stuff. I've tried a whole bunch of different ways of like keeping my planes slippery. And I'm sure James probably. What do you use out of curiosity?
I am actually currently in the method of testing several different things. There's a couple different direct products as well as beeswax, as well as a couple different oils that I'm actually playing with to see which one I like the best. Right now it's beeswax, but, I have one other product that I want to try that I might like a little bit more.
Yeah. So I've messed around with a few different things in the past. Paraffin wax obviously works really well. The best I have ever found is a mutton tallow. It's ridiculous. Yes. I mean, it sounds weird, but it is.
No.
It's like playing air hockey.
Have you ever seen incredible. A tallow carpet?
No.
The really old wooden hand tool people will have this piece of carpet that's like 4 inches wide by about 12 inches long. And the thing is completely soaked with this mutton fat. And they'll just set the planes on top of it when they're not using them.
It's unbelievable. It's incredible. I think McQueen's pure mutton tallow is the stuff that I've used. I'd say that's hands down the best, but it's like a little can and you have to like you have to pop the top off and smear it around. And it's just way too
best
like
stuff.
It's like way too artisan of a like of a process. Like I'm usually covered in filth and I'm in a hurry to get back to work and I don't have time to like unscrew like little canisters and smudge and dab. And, but it's the best I've used. Paraffin wax works well, but what I've been doing lately is the, Paul Sellers method where like I got a little tin can and I put, like old t-shirts in it and I just squirt the crap out of it with 3-in-1 oil. I don't have to do it anymore because it's completely saturated and it's handy. I keep it under my bench. So whenever I need to, slippery up my planes, I don't know how to put that into words. I just rub that across the bottom of the plane and it's good to go. It's quick and it's efficient. It's probably not the smoothest or the slickest, but it works pretty well.
Yeah. It's so, fast too.
It's the least, it's the quickest process. I don't have to do anything. It's there. That's one good use for it. And also like I do a lot of drilling and cutting with my big metal chop saw and jig saws because I don't have a plasma cutter. So a lot of really hot processes, I guess. And so I make like drilling and cutting oil with mineral spirits. And it's usually like about one to one part oil to like 10, 15 parts mineral spirits. And that's a really good, like cutting drilling fluid. So I go through a lot of oil in my shop.
Yeah.
Like light machine oil. It's not necessarily 3-in-1. The sewing machine stuff all actually works pretty well too.
So,
So that's my tool of the week.
I had never like waxed my planes ever up until the whole day. And I almost like threw it off the other end of the board. I'm like, whoa, this makes a little bit of a difference. I just used paste wax. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to try this. I've heard people talk about this from time to time. Yeah. And it was insane.
It's a revelation.
Truly. Yeah. I mean,
like if somebody has planed without ever like putting stuff on the bottom, it will blow your mind.
Why is that not in like the instruction manual on like every plane? You know,
it's in all the old ones,
dude. Like, yeah,
I feel like your tool is not like your plane is not a complete tool unless the bottom is like,
oh yeah,
greasy or waxed, man, or
it was
something
truly incredible. So
a lot of the old woodworking benches actually would have a can recess so that there'd be like an inch of towel sticking up above, just like the Paul Sellers towel can, but recessed into the bench so that all you have to do is drag the plane across that spot on the bench and you'd be ready to go. So every, every other board or so, you just drag it across that. And so it wouldn't take any more time to constantly keep the bottom oiled.
I like the tallow carpet. It just sounds
awesome. It's very rustic.
Sounds like a 70s funk band.
Yeah, extremely messy though. Once you start putting wood curls and dust into that, it's
metal shavings and a tallow carpet sound like a really bad mixture. That sounds not good.
It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Everything in my shop is like contaminated with metal and wood. It's terrible. Even my lungs.
Cool. Well,
we have a joke of the week, don't we?
Oh yes, we do. Actually, I forgot. I almost glossed right over that. Yeah, we'll do that, and then we'll move into the after show. So anybody who's not a $4 or $5 Patreon supporter, you will not get the after show. But yes, the after party, as it's now called. So yeah, another great joke from Jacob Hladek. Did you hear about the guy at the sawmill who cut off the whole left side of his body? He's all right now.
Oh, that's good.
That was a pretty good one, I thought. So thank you, Jacob, for that.
Coming, guys.
Yeah, he's got another one. We're already prepared for next week. So we've got we're even ahead now, which is just ridiculous. So
well, don't discourage people.
No.
We don't want to run out.
I think it's here to stay. So
I hope so.
Thanks to everybody.
We should compile a book like once we get enough. And we can like credit the contributors.
That would be awesome. Cool. Well, thank you to everyone for listening again. If you haven't already, check us out on Patreon. It's a great way to support us. Also, if you don't want to give us any money, give us a rating on iTunes or Android or wherever you listen to your podcast. That is super helpful for us. We haven't asked to do that in a while, so we need to start doing that again probably. But thanks again to everybody. This is super fun as always, and hopefully see a lot of you guys in Atlanta. So until next time, happy building.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, guys.